Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of V Orbit Season 2. My name is Umema Suhail, and I'm the editor-in-chief at The Sputnik, Wilfrid Laurier University's independent student newspaper on the Brantford campus. V Orbit is The Sputnik's official podcast where I sit down and have a chat with writers and creators on our team about their published work and our monthly issues. In this episode, I'm so excited to have in the studio Tasharika Tyagi, The Sputnik's Infinitum editor.
Hi guys, it's me, Tasharika. Nice to meet you all. I'm a journalism student and a creative writer. I enjoy both news article writing and creative writing, whether it be in form of poetry, short story, songwriting, or any sort of thing. The only type of writing I'm not that great with is research papers.
Are any of us good at research papers?
Yeah, so my story is called The Dead Don't Want to Be Held. It's about love, death, and grief, and what can really do to a relationship.
Yeah, so Tasharika wrote a short story called The Dead Don't Want to Be Held for our Valentine's Day issue in February. I hope you got a copy, otherwise you can read it online. She also hosted one workshop and one event throughout the month. So, hey Tasharika, how are you today?
I'm good. We had a pretty exciting day at the Sputnik today, so I'm actually kind of happy to be here right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm so glad that you're so happy to be here today. So let's talk about your story, first of all, the one that you published for our Valentine's Day issue in February. I really liked this one, but I want to ask you, like, before I tell you my opinion, for those who didn't read your story yet, unfortunately, what is your story really about? Like, why don't you just give us, like, a little bit of a breakdown of what's happening here? Mm-hmm.
So there are two lovers called Amber and Angelique. Angelique, sadly, she lost Amber and she couldn't handle that grief. So she forced Amber's soul back into her body and she brought her back. Except the story is about how sometimes when you have these sort of situations, you really should let them go, because what happens to Angelique at the end, perhaps she wanted it, but most probably not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I especially like your last line, actually. It's called, like, your last line is, "The dead don't want to be held, so let them go." So I know that's kind of, like, similar to your title, but I really like it because I also feel like this could apply to more than just, like, a relationship that mm-hmm. has, like, love and romance. It could also be, like, a platonic relationship or, like, a family relationship where there's, like, love and grief. But I wanted to ask you, like, what inspired you to write the story?
Well, to be honest, it does come from grief that I've dealt with my own grandmother and, like, other people in my life who sadly passed away. But I was very close with my grandmother, and I find myself often like wishing that she was still around. Except, you know, in my culture, you're supposed to let the dead rest, because if you think too much about it, you're actually stopping them from release, like being at peace.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, you're hurting the people you love the most, but at the same time, you know, you're also hurting yourself, because if you're stuck in the past and if you're stuck grieving, you can't move on, you can't live on, because you're just being held down by that invisible weight of that grief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, well, I'm so sorry to hear about you, Grandma.
It's okay.
I personally was also reminded of not... Like, well, my uncle, he passed away a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, a long time ago. Not, like, more than just a few years ago. And I remember it really, like, impacted our family, and because we were all really close with him. So, I don't know, the story kind of reminded me of that, where it's, like, you know, you can't, like you're saying, like, can't really, like, cling on to people. They also want to rest. But yeah, I really, and you know, I know immediately when people read the title, they might think it's like a horror short story and like, you know, but I think this is actually really like a really good story to have in like the Valentine's Day issue. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you want to speak to that a bit?
Yeah, I really wanted to write this in the Valentine's issue because in ways people only think of love often as a romantic part, the first few, you know, starting pieces of it, the honeymoon phase or so. They don't really think about what could happen if, you know, your love sours or if, you know, your love passes away. How do you move on? How do you keep living? Because not everybody, you know, is able to keep their partner with them, or like, even if, like, let's say your partner left, right, you can't force them into a relationship back with you. I think even people who have that sort of mentality can also read this and sort of, you know, feel a bit of sense, like, yeah, when you are holding a relationship that's already dead and gone, it can also be like holding something that is, you know, like a corpse to yourself and trying to keep it moving, you know. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really important to have in our Valentine's issue.
Yeah, I think so too, just because, you know, as you're saying, it is very encompassing of, I think, what we should be reflecting on. And when it comes to like Valentine's Day, like, it's not, again, like, it's not just for like romantic relationships, it could also apply to, you know, platonic relationships and whatnot. And I think that your story, although, you know, obviously it focuses on a couple, you know, the overall message and the theme of it can like cover other aspects too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to say about your piece?
Well, I just want to give a shout out to Olga, who was our lead Sputnik photographer. Mm-hmm. Olga provided a really nice graphic to go along with my story, and I really appreciate it because I think it shows the sort of yearning that you feel when somebody passes away and stuff. Mm-hmm. I appreciated that.
Yeah, of course. And, of course, this graphic is in our paper if you have a copy. But, again, it's also online, too. So you can, like, totally take a look. I feel... How do you feel, like, graphics in general just kind of, like, tie into your story? Because I feel like that is something that we've kind of worked on at the Sputnik in the past couple months.
Mm-hmm. I actually think so far we've had pretty good graphics to go along with the story whenever a writer is able to explain to us what they really want, because sometimes writers are not able to explain to us exactly the type of image that they want. They give us, mm-hmm, a basic idea of what they want to go along with their story, but if we have the perfect image, like if somebody really has an idea, it really enhances the story, because what really catches the reader's eye when they first look at your print or online is usually the graphic that goes along with the story. So I think that's a very important thing, and I'm glad that we have a whole team here at the Sputnik that is just, you know, helping us along with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Okay, and what was the process like? Like, going back to your story, like, what was the process of you writing it? And, like, I know you said that it was your grandmother who, like, inspired the story, but, you know, what was that like?
Yeah, so when I'm writing this, usually when I'm writing any story, I tend to put music on in the background that will go along with the stories that will sort of inspire. This one, I had a French singer that I can't remember the name of, but, like, it was a sort of French house remix of some opera type music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it sounded like it was very yearning, but like sad, but it was also house, so you could dance to it. And I really enjoyed that when I was writing this, because I thought like the complex beats of the song really helped me write this. I also listened to some, like, a few ballads while writing this, or like trying to formulate this. The writing process sort of started with me thinking, like, it's Valentine's, let's do something out of the ordinary. I'm sure that when people pick up the newspaper, they'll usually be expecting our Infinitum corner to have some like sweet pieces about Valentine's. And other news stories in here were also very much focused on romance and sort of the budding feeling of the romance, the start of romance and stuff. And so in our Infinitum section, we went into more depths about romance. So even our lead writer, Thando, also did something that was a bit askew from romantic, like lighthearted stuff. But for me, yeah, I listen to music. I try to get into the mindset of this. I thought about my grandma. I also thought about sort of like just old-timey music. I took inspiration from, you know, musicians like Sade and stuff. Yeah, those people really helped me out. I think art often helps other forms of art. And what I mean by that is sort of like you can be inspired by a painting to create a song. There are countless songs, let's say, about the Mona Lisa. I know people have written tons of stories regarding that one painting, The Swing, and like things like that. Or you hear a song and you just want to create something else to go with it. Like if you watch any culinary documentary, although a lot of them seem very snobbish, they do have such a love for their craft, and they try to bring about the feeling of some of the most like complex Mozart pieces into their food. Yeah, so like I think art is able to inspire itself and create, which also is not very like, it isn't replicable by, I believe, algorithms and such, because okay, that's a second topic.
Yeah.
That we could get into, but like I think AI isn't able to create. It can replicate and it can grow on the process that you've given it.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't change, such as a human being could change. Like, let's say, like there is person A, their name is Tommy. They've been raised to think that tomatoes are terrible. But if they find like other people enjoying it and they see new ways to enjoy a tomato, they might actually change their point of view. AI can't do that. And that is such an important part of art.
Mm-hmm. I like how we talked about AI for a bit there. Because I also wanted to just ask, because, like, me personally, when it comes to short stories, I feel like I struggle because I get such bad, like, writer's block. And, like, I have an idea, but, like, the fact of just, like, having to put it down on paper, or, like, you know, these days, you know, Word document or something, it's just, you know, so tiring and tiresome. So, like, I guess I want to ask, like, what your tips are for getting through that. But you're also saying, like, art inspires art, you know? So I don't know, like, what do you think?
So for writer's block, I find it really, I also get writer's block a lot, mm-hmm. but I think one of the more fun ways to do is that you just write a paragraph about what you're thinking. Like, sometimes just have the laptop in front of you and then write out what you're thinking. And you can delete it or you can just let it be. But sometimes while you're writing out what you're thinking, you start feeling the urge to write out your creative thoughts as well.
Oh, wow, that's smart, yeah.
Yeah, and then after that, when you've written down your ideas, you might not want to embellish on it right now, but then you might, like, look back at it later when you're bored and then write on it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes also helping with writer's block is change of scenery, change of, like, what you have to do. Sometimes you just kind of actually have to exercise to get it out really? Of your system. Yeah. So, like, you just have to, like, work out really hard, and then you try to get back onto, like, the swing of writing, and it'll work. Because it's just, like, you've changed the way your mindset was a few seconds ago, and you've done something, so your brain has started to create endorphins and stopped having that anxiety. Because I feel as though a lot of writers are scared of their own ability and inabilities, and it can only be helped if we continue to write. And yeah, there's a lot of books out there, there's a lot of short stories mm-hmm. out there, there's a lot of poems out there, but there's never like somebody, nobody's ever been like, yeah, that's enough books, that's enough writing now.
That's true.
We did it, guys.
That's true, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's always an important part of like growing your craft, continuing doing what you have to. And sometimes it's not even about writing a short story. It's about you want to write a short story, but you can't write out your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe sit in like complete silence or something like that. Just take yourself away from your current, like where you are at the moment, whether mm-hmm. it be mentally or like physically. Sometimes people need to go physically somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
That's also why, like, so many writers go to, like, coffee shops and stuff. Because, like, the hubbub of a coffee shop can also change the way you're thinking. But that's a very expensive answer.
Yeah, and because it's Ramadan, I don't know if I can.
Oh, no.
I don't know if I'd want to. But,
I'd say for, like, if you're having Ramadan or if you're fasting and you can't go to one of these shops, just go try to write out your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That at the very least will have you feeling like you wrote something out, and then you can read back on it and think, oh, what if I wrote a character who had thoughts like these?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because I feel like every character has a sort of inkling of you. Even if they're the opposite of you, you've thought about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So sometimes writing out your thoughts, just whatever they may be, it can help.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And sorry, to go back to, like, what you said about, like, you know, art inspiring art and AI. Like, I thought with for me personally, sometimes it's, like, it's quite literally what you said, like, a painting that kind of inspires, like, a short story or something. But I'm wondering, like, also, when it comes to AI, what do you think about people, like, putting in prompts and, like, building a story off of that? Or, like, using ChatGPT to write stories? Or, I don't know, like, using AI in some sort of way to overcome their writer's block, quote-unquote, or... Right.
I think that it's okay to get, like, maybe, like, prompts from AI or, like, read a story that the AI wrote for you to, like, get inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's the tool that needs to be used, because I feel as though, you know, AI takes away your own writing style because it's using the most... like the average writing style, and that doesn't have to be yours. You're not learning anything from it. I believe it is much better to actually go out, actually read these things. AI could be good for prompts, or AI could be good for understanding what like the average writer would have written, because AI is using average written prompts, but I don't think AI can ethically be used in art.
Okay, so AI doesn't count as art.
I would say no.
Okay. Okay, yeah, no, I definitely wanted to get your opinion on that, because you are the Infinitum editor, and I wanted to ask you a couple questions about, like, I don't know, your role in general. So, like, in terms of, like, how we produce these issues. So you mentioned earlier your lead writer, Tando, and how he also wrote something in the Valentine's Day issue that was sort of past the idea of, like, surface-level love or the beginning of love. He wrote a little past that. So, like, for you, like, how do you handle the section? Make sure, like, because I know every month you have a theme, right? So do you want to, like, maybe talk about that and, like, how you kind of administer that to your writers and how you kind of, I don't know, upkeep the section and make sure that you're always publishing, like, great work, which you always are?
I tend to try to figure out ways that what everybody expects of the month can be presented, but in, like, a way that would challenge my writer. So, well, I did say love for February because that was very obvious. And that was also the theme of our newspaper as a whole.
Right.
I've chosen, like, for March we had bugs and plants. And that's because March is, like, supposed to be the start of, you know, spring and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a way, what can you do with spring that would be out of what they would normally think? So I want them to go out of their way to create new ideas, to see things in a different light so that they can continue to challenge themselves. I often have a problem with creative people where they're too into themselves. They're too introspective, or they use a lot of words, but they can't describe their emotions properly. And I feel as though, like, what they really need to do is every art person needs to be put out of their comfort zone from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
If you see something this way, try to figure out how somebody else would see it. You know, don't ever stay comfortable, because comfort in art can lead to, like, its own downfall. Even people like who create things that are super comforting to others, they've been through a lot of pain, they've been through a lot of emotion, and that's why they can touch on nostalgia or of the feeling of what a hot cup of tea or, like, a warm bowl of soup can, like, really do for a person, because they know from, like, a perspective of somebody who hasn't had that, or, you know, who's been through so much that at the end of the day, simplicity is what matters. But they're still going out of their way to learn about this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always about going out of your comfort zone. And that's what I try to tell my writers. I try to instill it. I try to get them to notice the way I make changes, to make sure every sentence has an impact. Because when you have, like, such a restricted amount of words that we can write, every word should have an impact. And that's also why I really enjoy writing for a newspaper, because in this way, you know that every word counts. Every little bit counts. I'm often inspired by the guy who created Spy Kids.
Oh, yeah.
Because he made art in the most efficient way possible. Like, he always made every penny count. He made every little second that the actors were on stage count. But he did something that was so fun, that was, like, worth it for all kids when they saw it. And that's just amazing, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of, like, how I'm trying to help my writers in their writing styles and stuff. I try to help them sort of think out of the box, make every word count, and just, you know, but also express yourself, have your own voice.
Yeah.
And I'm really thankful that every writer that I've worked with for In Infinitum this whole year has had their own voice, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's undeniable that the Infinitum team is so strong this year. We have like phenomenal writers there, including Tasharika, yourself, and then also Tando and your volunteers. Like, they're very, very strong writers. I am wondering, though, have you ever had to push them outside of their comfort zone, and how did you do that?
So, like, this goes into sort of, like, I want to lead by example, so I try to show them, like, or recommend them things that would be out of their, you know, sort of comfort zone. I know two of my writers really enjoy Quentin Tarantino. I'm not the biggest fan, and I can tell you that, unlike most people who say they're not a biggest fan and haven't seen most of his work, I am that kind of person. When I sometimes become a hater, I am checking out everything they've done so that I'm a proper hater.
Oh my gosh. I was gonna ask, like, really? Because, I don't know, I saw Pulp Fiction, I get the appeal, but...
I don't. I think Quentin Tarantino is a writer, I guess, that's pretty good for what he did in the beginning. But he I wouldn't say that he's one of the best. I also don't think his conversations are that interesting. I think he's just another edgy guy who is trying to make it into the industry. I think he writes women terribly. I think he has a lot to learn, and that sucks because I'm pretty sure he doesn't care, but I've seen a lot of his work, albeit he has great action scenes, but he's not the action choreographer, so he just has good people working for him.
Yeah, I know, I feel like he always tries to put himself in the movies, too. I don't know, I kind of have seen Kill Bill, and I've seen, like, Pulp Fiction properly, like, you know. For Kill Bill, I wasn't really paying attention. It was my family who was watching it. I think I was, like, on my phone or something the whole time. Mm-hmm. I don't know what was happening then. But, yeah, you do have writers that are inspired by Quentin Tarantino. You can kind of see that in the stories, too. But who do you look up to then, like, in terms of writing? Who do you think is a good writer?
Well, first, I do love Ernest Hemingway. He's a journalist and a writer, and I always appreciate him. And he said, brevity is the soul of the wit. I felt that. I also enjoy a Japanese writer. Her name is Banana Yoshimoto. I think I read this one story by her called Kitchen, and I really like that one. I just find, like, I've read some stories online by fanfic writers, and I've enjoyed those very much. I love, you know, Pride and Prejudice. Jane Austen has the best way with words, I would say. She's truly a master at it. I have a lot of people that I think are, like, people you can be inspired by. I think there was a freedom fighter named Thomas Sankara. I think his writing was also beautiful, albeit it was a revolution piece, but, like, it was very beautiful. He taught in a very open-minded way, and I was inspired by his thoughts. Like, you can find inspiration everywhere. You can find inspiration in a cookbook about somebody complaining about their kids. Sometimes when I'm reading recipes online, I do find it interesting to know, like, oh, so your kid is at a soccer practice when you're making this. And it's just, I think writing can be beautiful, written by most people. I love Tove Jansson. She wrote the children's novels, like Moomin novels, and Moomin comic strips. It's really, like, there are a lot of writers in this world, dead and alive, who I take inspiration from. And I never think somebody's too low to take inspiration from. I also find inspiration from my writers themselves. Yeah. I think Thando, for one, writes very beautifully. He has such a strong and willing heart to help others out, and his pieces tend to have a social commentary to back them up. He's often thinking about female perspectives of those in, like, who have to deal with hardships their whole lives, and I find that really, really inspiring in itself as well. That even, like, no matter what, he's making sure that his voice matters, you know? And that's something really special. He enjoys superhero content, and most people will think, oh, that's, you know, that's just superhero content. Like, when you look at Marvel, you really think surface-level things.
Yeah.
But he goes deeper. He tries to bring up, like, real-life issues into these things, and that's also inspirational in itself. Like, I think there's inspiration wherever you look for it. I just don't think it's an AI.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, I actually love your answer. I love what you just said. And I have to agree with you on, like, literally everything you said about Thando as well. Mm-hmm. He is, like, an excellent writer. And, like, he does go deeper. And I think that is inspirational. Like, I agree, you know? I think even, like, reading the Sputnik and reading the Infinitum section could inspire people, like, in itself. When it comes to, like, writers in general, like, not even just at the Infinitum, but, like, in other sections, it is hard to kind of, like, make sure that things are within the word count. So I especially, like, value what you said about how, like, every word matters, because every word truly does, especially in, like, a newspaper when you're kind of fighting for, like, those restraints. So thankfully in the Infinitum, what we've been able to do is, like, have some of the story, like, in print and then have most of it online, because, you know, it's just so hard for, at least for me personally, to, like, think of what to cut down. And I know, Tasharika, like, you've had experience with editing too.
Yeah. Sometimes I really regretted cutting out, like, different things in the story because I thought that was important for other parts. Some of my writers enjoy using foreshadowing a lot. And sometimes, like, leaving the breadcrumbs, you often get confused by the first breadcrumb because you're like, why is this here? But it's also part of, like, keeping the story going. But, like, when you're in a newspaper, if something doesn't make sense when you're reading it, it's gotta be out. And that's been something I struggled to edit out. But I think overall, the writers have, like, now adapted to, you know, the sort of way to write for a newspaper. I really appreciate that. Yeah, like, it is tough. It is tough to edit. It is tough. Sometimes when you're editing, you're, like, unsure if this is something you really want to take out, mm-hmm. or if you want to keep it in, which is also why I think for writing, flow is also very important. Like, in rapping, you know, there's rhythm and poetry, right? I think that should be the same way with short stories or anything else that you're writing. There should be a rhythm to the way you read it, because sometimes people get tired. Like, if it's a long sentence followed by another long sentence followed by another long sentence followed by another long sentence, people might not be able to read all of it, because even when you're thinking in your brain, you could get tired. Or if you were reading it out loud, then that would be tough to continuously do. So that's why I've also tried to incorporate flow into the way my writers are writing, which has been kind of tough because it's very hard to articulate that, because I myself am a writer, and articulation, I struggle with that as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like when you're writing it out, then you can go edit it and edit it and then edit it, and then you sound well articulated. But when you're speaking out loud, words can jumble up, words can go from here and there in your brain. It's a mess, and I've struggled with trying to explain to the people I'm working with what I want or what I mean. Mm-hmm. But it's been very great, Lika, because the team is really, they're willing to go the distance, you know, they're willing to keep trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I actually completely get what you're saying about the articulation part, because I feel like me personally, like, I also have to think a bit before I say something, because, I don't know, the first time you say something, I feel like it can come out, like, really wrong, but with writing, it's not like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reason why I bring up these questions about editing and all that is because I genuinely appreciate the way that you edit, because I think it's not necessarily rare, but I personally don't often see within the people that I meet people being overly critical or, like, sorry, no, not overly critical, but, like, people being critical at all about fiction work. Like, people, I feel like, are so quick to just kind of publish whatever or just kind of, like, whatever submissions you get, you know. But I think in the same way that we edit news stories and sports stories and arts and culture, like, there is a certain method of editing fiction, and I think you've pretty much, like, mastered how to do that during your time at the Infinitum. I think it's very obvious that you care a lot about your writers, and this is why I kind of also wanted to mention in this episode that throughout February, you also hosted a workshop and an event for your writers that were also open to other people at the Sputnik and then people outside of the Sputnik as well who were on the Laurier campus that day. So I do want to first of all talk about the workshop because that happened first. So that was a workshop with Juliet Jones Rodney. So do you want to like talk about maybe like what inspired you to do it? How did you even like come up with that? And like what even is playwriting? Like I have all these questions.
Okay, yeah. So what started that was that I wanted to do workshop from the very get-go. That I wanted like when you're writing, I wanted to make sure that the team that I had, because at the very beginning, it was just me and Lando. That's also why I keep mentioning him as well.
Mm-hmm, like in September.
Yeah, in September, it was just me and Lando. And then I was thinking, like, I could help him create the portfolio that he needs to be, like, the writer that he wants to be. So we decided, I asked him what kind of workshop he wanted. He wanted to do one on comics. And I tried to find it, but I couldn't. So I went for what else could I do? Well, I knew somebody who did songwriting and playwriting. Technically, that's the same person who did both. So I then was like, well, I still want to do a workshop with the writers to teach them a new way. I talked to my writers and volunteers. They were interested in acting and writing. Like plays or something like that. So we decided we do one for playwriting. I knew Juliet from the get-go. I've known her for a very long time. And I know she's done like festivals and stuff. She even did like an audio drama, and it was a very interesting like piece about mother and daughter and grandmother. And I thought what best to show, you know, my writers who are trying to dip their toes into different types of writing than somebody who is multi-talented and has multiple niches that they work in. So I asked Juliet, we decided to create something together, and this was also her first workshop, so it was really nice. Now she's doing other workshops for like the festival and stuff, and it's really interesting, and I'm very happy that I held that workshop. I wish I'd had more time to do more workshops, but this was very important. And playwriting is a special sort of writing, and I've always had, like, that's been my second sort of interest in writing. I've done a little bit of playwriting myself for, like, my high school and stuff. And I thought, like, this is a great way for them to learn more interpersonal skills, because you have to know those things when you're playwriting, because you have to make it sound believable. You have to make everything that you've written seem to have a sort of vision to it, because a lot of times I also noticed that two of the writers I had wrote in a very visual manner, and I thought this might help them develop that sort of niche that they have, albeit playwriting and short stories are still very different. And sometimes I feel as though when we were doing that workshop and they were taking notes, I felt like getting up and being like, wait, guys, make sure you're taking this only for playwriting and not for short stories, because how you wanted to write short stories. Mm-hmm. But thankfully they were learning well. It was very interesting because it matters. Like, you learning different types of art skills matters, because then you can just make your own form of art way better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I was wondering too, like, why playwriting? But I think if that's what your writers wanted, you know, then that makes so much sense. And I did attend that workshop, and it was fantastic. Thank you so much, Juliet, if you're listening. Like, we loved having Juliet here. And she had like a PowerPoint and everything ready, so it was really lovely. And thank you to Sharika for hosting that. It was everyone at the Infinitum attended, but I did too, and our senior copy editor Victoria also attended. So it really resonated with like other people outside of like the Infinitum too. Like, we're all interested in that too. But I think that's funny how like you said that we shouldn't like take those same tips for short stories, because I feel like I might have accidentally done that and like written down tips that she said at the workshop and tried to put that in a short story. So see, I really appreciate your like, you know, geniusness in like fiction, because I did not like connect those dots. But yeah, no, playwriting, and like that's just that's amazing. So I also wanted to ask, because like also in February you had a 100 short stories event. So do you want to maybe talk a bit about that and like what inspired that? How did that look like? Because I know the room was filled with like these like artificial candles and like these little lights. So 100 of them to be precise.
Yes. Okay, so I'm a bit of a horror and urban legend buff. I really enjoy those, and I try to find them from all different types of countries. And I had heard of, like, this urban legend, which is not true, that, like, because I did my research on it. It was just, like, a little thing. So back in the day, samurais used to tell each other 100 horror stories when it was really hot and stuff to, like, give each other the chills, but it was also, like, a courage test. And then over the years it like warped, and because things always change, people were like, if you get to the 101 and you blow out the candle, something supernatural will happen. I did my research. Nothing's ever happened.
Okay.
But yeah, so I was really excited. I wanted to do that for us. I had told my writing team, and I'd asked them, would you like to do that? And they all seemed very excited. We also had a little prank planned, but we couldn't do that.
Oh, what? What was the prank?
Well, I thought it would be interesting to have our own urban legend, because Wilfrid Laurier University, like our Brantford campus, mm-hmm. doesn't have its own urban legend that I know of.
So
I
thought, does the Waterloo campus have an urban legend?
Yeah, that I don't know. I'll find out next year.
Okay.
But I know, like, some places have their own, like, myths or legends and stuff, so I was hoping to create one, and that would be the Infinitum's sort of little secret that we created a myth. I was planning to say that somebody went missing after the thing, and then just create a rumor that just stayed there forever.
Okay. I don't know if we did that.
I didn't, because we didn't get to 100 stories, so nobody would have believed that.
Right. We didn't get to 100 stories. We ended up getting to, like, what, 45?
No, we got to 65.
Oh, yeah, 65. Which is a lot.
It was a lot, but it was so tiring. At the end, I remember I was just like, so there was a girl. She went into the basement. She died.
Yeah, our short stories got simpler and simpler. It was just, so people, they went around, we went around in like a circle, and there was a huge turnout. Like, it literally wasn't just Infinitum people. It was like literally people, because this was hosted in like in the nook where the games lounge is. Mm-hmm. People from the games lounge came in, people like your friends came, and you know, other writers were there. So it was a huge thing, and we all kind of took turns like either saying a story that we wrote, or like, you know, a story that we came up on the spot, or you know, one from online.
I really appreciated the people who attended the event that weren't related to the Sputnik. Some told their own horror stories related to their families
and their own experiences.
They might have been lying, but we don't know. I'm just happy that they were there. Not much of a believer in like until I see it or something. But, like, I'm also not going to say that I don't believe in ghosts. I've just never, like, I enjoyed the idea of ghosts. So I would like there to be something supernatural. I would love there to be dragons and all of that. But do I really believe it? I'm not too sure about that. But it was really nice to have those people who came and they told their own stories. We had this really creative person who came, a mutual friend between us, Sophia, and Sophia Sophia is a very good storyteller.
Oh yeah,
I can tell you that. She was able to build the mood very well, even though it was like near the end and everybody was sort of getting tired. So we had gone on some of just trying to do comedic little short stories, or just going into depth about different stories and different parts. But yeah, it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I had bought 100 LED, like, tiny LED candles and decorated the place. I'd also dressed up for the event.
Mm-hmm.
People were confused because they were like, this is February, not October. Why are we doing it? And it was like, it's more about just sort of the horror, like, just telling the story aspect. Technically, if I could have, I would have done it more during, like, September or, like, yeah, maybe October, but, like, earlier in the school year so that we could have had more people know of the Infinitum, know of Sputnik and everything, and attend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really nice because a lot of people were like, if you guys do this again, we would love to know. We would love to be part of this again. They enjoyed themselves. There mm-hmm. was a guy who did get scared a few times, and that was great because that really built up our confidence.
One guy was just scared the whole time, but he stayed like the whole time too.
Yeah,
he was hiding behind his jacket, but he was there.
He was there
for the whole, like, what, 3 hours?
Yeah,
we were there.
In our eyes, he's a samurai.
yeah, he's a real one.
Yeah,
one person, I think they told, because he spoke on, like, a personal story that mm-hmm. had happened to him that was, like, really scary. And then one other person told, like, a djinn story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, is that what you're referring to by, like, the story that you kind of don't believe?
Well, no, I believe the djinn story, I'm not too sure about. But, like, the one guy who was saying his personal story that revolved around, like,
hotel.
Yeah, or like the exorcism place.
That's the djinn story.
That was a djinn story.
Yeah.
I didn't fully believe it because he went into things that were, if it was true, everybody would know about it.
Oh.
But, you know, because, like, he says, I think he might have exaggerated like some parts.
Mm.
But I found it very interesting, yeah. Though, I would never mess with a djinn.
Yeah. I mean, I personally, like, as a Muslim, believe in jinns.
Yeah.
So I don't know. His story, to me, I was like, whoa, you know, because, like, I was believing, like, every word. But, I mean, he did say he was young when it happened, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just crazy. I like how people brought in their own personal experiences, even though this was technically supposed to be, like, you know, our own short stories,
mm-hmm.
like a writing exercise. But
But I also wanted them to bring stories that they were inspired by. Like, that's what I said, bring mm-hmm. like 5 stories. I didn't really mean like bring stories that are very specific to you. I kind of wanted them to branch out. But I was very happy when I heard the stories that they wrote, albeit I think they were not all good for storytelling. Which was another thing that I felt like if I have to do another workshop, I would do one on storytelling because...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be a good workshop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you need a bit of a theatrical sort of thing. Like, mm-hmm. one of the people who I think of as a good storyteller was that one American actor, Robert Williams, or what was it? Robin Williams.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a good storyteller. He was a really good storyteller. The way he acted was the way of a storyteller.
Yeah,
and I thought I should have probably sent more examples, but like somebody like him, like emulate. I wanted people to emulate their favorite storytellers, like if you've ever seen them, if you've ever heard like if you've heard literature readings or something like that. I like there's this Japanese card game called Karuta where they read out like a piece of the poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way that some of the professionals who read the poetry read it because it just sounds so beautiful.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like that's also what we're told when we're doing, like, when we're first getting into journalism, to find a journalist that you like and sort of try to learn from them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I also wanted for my writers, to find a storyteller that they liked and to sort of learn how to emulate them in ways and then fit them to your own style, like find your own style. But if you haven't found your style first, you can try to learn from people who are already there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Try to figure out what makes them work, right? Because when you're trying, then even if you're like acting like somebody else, you learn a little bit about them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can learn a little bit about the craft from them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and just speaking of storytelling, you mentioned, like, Sophia, who was there at the event. She actually wrote a couple of poems for the Sputnik. I believe we published them in our September issue or October. I don't quite remember, but they're there. And, you know, you're right. Like, we do have, like, even, I mean, I think we have storytellers that are really effective and strong storytellers, like, even on our campus.
No, I believe that. Like, yeah, storytellers can be found in, like, people who are, like, not even that interested in the arts. It's about the way you sort of articulate yourself, the way you're able to tell a tale, you know? Mm-hmm. Even if that tale is, like, about what happened to you at the grocery store, or, like, something happened to your coworker or something like that. You know, it's about learning from, like, it's just about keeping people around you engaged while you're talking. Mm-hmm. And that's really important, yeah.
So, like, what was your, when it comes to, like, the 100 candles and, like, the event, you know, you're dressed up for it and everything. Like, what was the ultimate goal? I know that you mentioned, like, you wanted to start, like, a sort of urban legend at Laurier Branford, which is really cool. Like, I think we should definitely have one. But like, really, when it comes to, like, thinking about your writers and, like, you know, them bringing in pieces that inspired them or that they wrote themselves in a circle and, like, reading that out loud, what was your intended goal with all of that?
Well, I really wanted them to be able to hear how stories, you know, are read. Because a big part of stories is storytelling, because that is the oldest, you know, art form of the written word. Because before it was written, people were telling each other stories by the campfire, or they were taking, like, little pieces of information from one place to another. Mm-hmm. Albeit it is also why there was, like, the dark age of information, because nobody wrote anything down. But it is a very important part of understanding writing. It's a very big, important part of understanding stories and poetry and art, because to hear what is being written is another way of learning how people are able to see that word, you know, to try to think about what word is being emphasized, what sentence is being given a break to, you know, how are stories that were meant to be spoken out loud, how are they structured, what is their flow, sort of like learning from that was, like, one of my basic end goals. I wanted to have a little debrief, but at that time I think everybody was scared, like, I mean, not scared, everybody was tired because it had been going on for so long. But yeah, we had it was important to have, like, an understanding of how the written word is translated in people's brains, or if somebody was reading it out to somebody else. Because think about when, you know, when somebody was a child and their parent read them a story, like, that's such a basic human thing to do, to tell each other stories. And I thought that would be a great way to explain flow to people.
Yeah, that's actually really smart. I never even, like, thought that deeply about it, but you're right. And you know, I do think, would you say that, like, storytelling is sort of like human instinct?
I would say yes.
Yeah, right? Okay. Yeah, and I think that exercise definitely did do what you intended for it to do, albeit, like, it was, like, a little exhausting, just because, I don't know, like, you know, because you're waiting for everyone's, you know, you're listening to everyone, but it was really entertaining, though. Like, I would say I thoroughly enjoyed, like, my whole time there. Like, every minute at that event was really cool, and I was even thinking, like, we were at 65, but, like, we should, because every time someone read something, like, they would, or told a story, they would, like, blow out a candle by just, like, turning it off. We got through, like, more than half. So we should, like, do a part two or something. Like, I think we should, like, completely finish, and then maybe we'll have, like, an urban legend.
Yes. Yeah. We have to get that urban legend created.
We have to. We're graduating this year.
I know.
We need to leave a little something spooky here.
It's a little Sputnik secret.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think especially like that storytelling aspect, sorry to go back to it again, I feel like at the Infinitum, you've also tried to do that in multiple multimedia platforms, like not just print or writing, but I think you also created like an audio drama for our December issue too.
Yes, yes, I'm very proud of that one. Yes, I wanted to make Infinitum, because we do have our own website, I thought we could host different ways that the writers can, you know, articulate themselves, articulate their thoughts, because sometimes a story does not have to go in the linear fashion. You could write a text novel thing, you could do a small video attached to it, create an ARG, like, which is an alternate reality game, something like that. And I really wanted to, like, encourage that in my writers. I did get two people who were more into games into our Sputnik team. However, they were very shy. I feel it was a little too late that I got them, that I couldn't build that sort of relationship to get them to try out different methods.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I really wanted... 'cause writing doesn't have to be linear. A story doesn't have to be linear. And I wanted to express that with Infinitum this year. I wanted us to expand our horizons. We did do that with one, with our December issue, which was my piece. We weren't able to do that with a lot of others. However, I will say somebody who really did that well was Thando again, our lead writer. He always incorporates comics into his writing. And that's really important. That's really special that he's able to incorporate different types of arts into his stories.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, when it comes to like that audio drama, I remember I was part of it too. Like, we had literally, like, you had actors. So there was me, and then I think our opinion editor Mitch Baldwin, like, he was there, and then Tando, of course, was there. Yeah, and like, we were all like acting, like, I don't know, do you want to tell us like what your vision was for that? Like, and of course, like, you guys, like, if you should totally check out Tasharika's audio drama, I believe the link should be up on the website near her story that was in the December issue.
So the first half of that story was a written piece, but it was a mystery story that left on a cliffhanger, so that everybody who was actually like reading that, we had a QR code for the print version, and then we had just the link straight for people online. And I wanted it to sort of like go into different sections, because I wanted it to sound like an old sort of, you know, Sherlock Holmes meets, you know, me. And like, just try to write like a sort of Victorian setting type story that also deals with just like family secrets and such, and what it can be like to, you know, uncover parts of your parents that you didn't even know about. I know I recently found out, well, not recently, but I found out some time ago that my parents, like my dad, had a different name on his birth certificate, which I felt like I was being betrayed. I was like, why didn't you tell me this? And he was like, because my name is different. And I was like,
oh my God. Okay.
I was like, I feel lied to. Who are you?
Yeah. Which one are you?
Which one are you? And it was like a long name. And I was like, wow, I can't believe you.
Is that why you changed it?
I don't know. Okay. It was like, it was somebody out of like, I think like the historic texts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, it was a long name. I forget that name now, but I teased my dad a lot. I was like, I don't know you. Who are you?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, like, not the same, because mine was comedic, but, like, learning about your family. And then I wanted it to sort of also have a bit of a fun noir feel from, like, back in the day. So I did get, like... Umema Mitchell, the opinion writer, and Thando, our lead writer, to act with it, act in it with me. And it was so fun. I think, like, actually doing the audio drama for the piece was very interesting. I had to use a different form of writing as well, because I had to use the narrator feature a lot more, because, you know, when you're writing a short story versus when you're writing a play or these things, there's more detail in the way you're trying to get people to understand, because they have to have an understanding of what's happening. You're not leaving your readers to just be in the blank, but you don't also want to explain too much, because they are trying to follow along the story with the people who are, you know, saying it, like the actors as they're acting. And I found it really fun. I think everybody did a great job. I definitely recommend everybody watching that, like, well, not watching, listening to it. I do think that now that I've had some time to think about it, I would have changed up a bit of the music that I used, because I feel as if certain parts of the story, the music that I used was a little too it was a little too whimsically gothic for those sections, but that's also like something you have to take care of when you're writing an audio piece, right?
Yeah,
you have to figure out what kind of foley should go in there, what kind of music would go along with it. And like, now that I've had some time, I can think about like what I would have done better, but I still think it's a good listen.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I just remember, like, the one thing that stuck out to me was obviously, like, Mitch's Southern accent. I guess that's not obvious, but, yeah, that was fun. Like, I just remember voicing, and it was really fun. I thought the script was pretty well written. It was pretty much, like half of Tasharka's story was on the feature spread in December. The whole story is called Family Visit, and it was sort of, like, part two, like, the ending. It's kind of like a murder mystery, too, wasn't it? So, like, you find out, like, what actually happens, and the whole thing is solved in the audio drama, which I thought was, like, a really interesting, like, take to how to, I don't know, it's like a really cool way of how you translated your story, especially with the murder mystery. Like, I thought it was really interesting to have like half of it in print and then the other half like as an audio drama. I just thought that was really cool.
It also, like, what I really wanted to do was get more people interested in the online version of the Sputnik as well, so that they know, like, even if you don't want to pick up the print, like, let's say you're kind of sick, but you really want to read it ASAP, then you know it's going to go up on our website. And we've worked hard on our website. I would say that it's very important for us to, like, see the website version as well. And we have the methods. Like, I really wanted us to, like, be able to use them, all of them. Yeah.
Of course. It's like, if we have this platform, like our website, we might as well be able to like slap on like videos or audio pieces onto them, or any sort of multimedia. So yeah, I really appreciate you like even reaching further and like doing those things and like having that multimedia aspect to your story. I think it really brings a huge aspect, and like you said, it even attracts people to like our website. So that was really cool. Thanks for that. Yes. Yeah. Is there anything else, Tasharka, you want to talk about when it comes to your work as Infinitum editor, multimedia stuff, events, workshops?
Well, right now I'm just I'm going to be going to Wilfrid Laurier's magazine for next year. If anybody who listens and is interested in, once again, writing with me, writing for me, or just wanting to be part of the process, that would be a magazine. I definitely recommend you reach out to me on my Instagram, which is Tuxedo Mask Tina. That is Tuxedo Mask Tina. And I'm always willing to help people out, because I think art can only be grown by those that are open-minded.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's exactly right. So Tasharka will be editor-in-chief of Blueprint Magazine on Laurier's Waterloo campus next year, starting in the fall. So absolutely, I think that would be an amazing opportunity for people to get that chance to work with you, write mm-hmm. with you, edit with you, and, you know, maybe even dive into that multimedia stuff that we're seeing at the Sputnik, more workshops and events for sure. Tasharka, thank you so, so much for speaking with us in episode 6 of The Orbit Season 2. If you haven't already, check out Tasharka's story called The Dead Don't Want to Be Held, along with many excellent pieces by our writers in our Valentine's Day issue, available on our website, thesputnik.ca. That's thesputnik.ca. Make sure to follow our socials, including X, TikTok, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And look out for our March issue on Stands Around Campus, the next episode of The Orbit on Radio Laurier Station, as well as other workshops and events you can join at The Sputnik. Thank you for tuning in, and have a wonderful weekend.